Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Row by Row Garden Show. I'm Travis.
And I'm Greg.
And we're excited to have you with us this week. Got a good show planned for you tonight. Tonight we're going to talk about onions because it's getting ready, getting time to plant onions.
I got onion fever.
You got onion fever? And so as soon as it dries up a little bit and we get them plants in, we'll be planting onions. So we want to talk about that and tips and stuff for planting and growing onions. And as always, if you have any questions during the show, please put those in the comments and we will get to them on next week's show. And if we answer your question on the show, we'll always send you a nice prize. So do that if you have any questions. And let's talk about what came of Gully Washer last night, didn't
it? Ooh, we've had some rain the last couple of days. I've had got some stuff planted in the garden, and I was feeling real good about it, but it may have had a little too much rain, but we'll wait and see.
You might have jumped the gun. Mm-hmm. Might have washed it away.
Let's show them this beet right here we got.
Radish.
Excuse me, radish. It's red, it looked like radish. And what variety is this?
That's a variety called Rover.
Rover. Nice red color to it there. And I got it where I like radishes.
And give it a sample there. Why are you peeling it?
Because I just want to. It's just sometimes what I do. You don't peel yours?
I just bite into them.
I was going to cut into it. So this is a white meat radish. Look at there. Now, some of the ones I planted the other day were the watermelon variety.
Yeah, red meat or watermelon.
Red meat that have kind of a reddish in there. So I planted two different varieties of radishes. And I planted a lot of other stuff. Now, I planted what you put on your taco and everything?
Cilantro.
Cilantro. I planted some cilantro, which you know cilantro grows real easy in the garden. And I planted some cilantro in the garden in the fall of the year because it's actually a cool weather crop.
That's right. It bolts real easy once it gets warm. Talking about these radishes for a minute. So I had actually harvested that entire, I had a double row, and I harvested them all Sunday, and we put them in our vegetable bags this week. And these two were kind of volunteers over to the side of the row, but it's a good indication. I wish they were all this size and that size uniform, but I'm bad about planting them too thick, and they don't always get the same size. So I think I need to dial back my seed plate. I'm gonna plant me another row here next week or two. Dial back my seed plate. Try to get some more uniformity to them there.
Now, these are a little spicy. Got a little bite to them. What about the breakfast radishes that everybody loves to grow?
The French breakfast radishes?
Yeah.
They kind of like a small
Do they have different flavor to them?
All radishes tend to have a little spice to them. I don't know if you can pickle them. I don't know we usually just cut them up and eat them in salads and stuff or eat them raw.
Right.
But they're good and they're really pretty.
Yep.
A lot of people were talking about eating the greens, basically just like a turnip green. You could eat the greens on them. So
the things that I got going in my garden planted right now is, of course, I got all my cover crops except my clover. I ran out of time. I didn't get my clover planted. I got carrots planted.
Mm-hmm.
I got English peas planted.
Mm-hmm.
I got beets planted.
Mm-hmm.
I got what else planted? We just see what it goes.
Cilantro
planted.
Radishes.
And radishes. Two rows of radishes planted. It's interesting to see if it'll all come up like it should. I think I did a good job on everything. So I went into your office the other day when I got ready to plant all this stuff. And I said, have we got any beet seed?
Mm-hmm.
Now, there ain't a lot you know that I don't know.
I don't know about that.
Well, ain't a lot you don't know that I don't know. But they were something that you explained to me on beet seed that I had never heard before, and I want you to share that with everybody else because that was kind of interesting.
So you were going to direct seed some beets, and the reason I do not like direct seed beets, the reason I transplant them, is because almost every variety of beet out there requires thinning.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the reason that is, so beet and chard seed are what we call a multi-germ seed, which means within that seed, there's actually two or three plants that will germinate.
See, I didn't know that.
And what happens is when you plant them, If you don't thin them out, they'll be overcrowded. Chard is not a big deal, but beets will be overcrowded. You won't get consistent size beet roots there. Now, there is one variety called Moneta or Moneta that is what they call a monogerm beet seed. And I was showing you some of those you can plant. That's what the
you have one sprout. That means mono means one. You have one sprout that comes off.
Yeah, you don't have to thin
it. Or the multi, you have three or four sprouts come off one seed.
Right. And I'd much rather thin them standing up in them trays than thin them in the ground. The big beet producers, I think, grow that Moneta variety. They use them vacuum seeders with a pelleted seed and all that. So, yeah, you can certainly direct seed the others. They'll need thinning in the ground. I like to do that ahead of time. But, yeah, beets and chard, multi-germ.
Monogerm.
Multi-germ versus monogerm. Right. Yeah.
I planted the monogerm.
We also, man, we got collards. I've been eating collards.
Collards
every Sunday. I've been cooking me a big old pot of collards.
They're good to me.
Those tiger collards are something else.
They are.
And I got kohlrabi. I got a bunch of stuff in the greenhouse still left to plant. Broccoli should be getting ready really soon. And daggum, cauliflower takes forever.
Yeah, Brussels sprouts.
Yeah. Speaking of Brussels sprouts, getting into our tool of the week. So, I got a 2-minute tip coming next Tuesday, so be on the lookout for that. But usually when we plant stuff on drip tape, we lay our drip tape, we turn the tape on, and we use where there's water spots our dictator, plant spacing. What happened to me though is I jumped the gun, laid my drip tape a few days before, got some rain, couldn't get in there to plant. And I didn't want to turn my water on that wet dirt. So I took my dibble wheel, my double dibble wheel, and you can put two of these side by side, and I used them for those planting the double row of Brussels sprouts, and it worked fabulously. You'll have to watch the video to
fabulously.
See it. You'll have to watch the video to see it. But this dibble wheel right here is a handy little tool. And for those plugs that come out of our 162 trays, we designed this dibble for that plug, and it works really nice for us.
So the bed I got laid off that I planted stuff in already that I'm waiting on my onion plants to come in, I'm not putting any drip irrigation down. So I'll use the dibble wheel to lay out for my onion sets.
Mm-hmm. Because you don't put your onions on drip.
Right.
So you're just going to do one, you just plant one row at a time. Is that how you're going to do yours?
Yeah, but I'm gonna plant them close, so I'll turn every dibble out there. Because I like to plant mine a little close, because you know, yeah. I like to pull mine early, every other one early, and eat them as what we call spring onions. I like to eat them early. Right. So.
Yeah, that's so I'm going to do mine. I'm going to lay my tape, maybe let it get a little compacted, and I'm going to do two on each side of the tape, and I'm going to put all the dibbles out. You can vary your spacing with these, but this right here is going to be the go-to tool for onions this year.
Yep.
And I'm thinking, might not even have to get on your knees. You just drop that plant in there and kind of kick it with your foot, and that'll make it real easy for you.
Yep.
So check that dibble wheel out if you got a wheel hoe. And then now let's get into talking about onions. Onions been on my mind for the last few weeks.
I'm ready. I am really ready.
So we want to give you a few pointers and kind of talk about different types of onions. So we did an interview with Bruce several months ago on the show, and he was giving us some pointers there. The varieties or the types of onions you plant is going to be based on your climate.
Mm-hmm.
Is it, you live in the southern latitudes, kind of the middle of the United States, or up north. It's all based on your day length. When that bulbing process starts. And the bulbing process, onions kind of have two stages. They have a vegetative stage where they're growing all the green leaves, and they have a bulbing stage. When that bulbing stage starts, whatever your average day length is going to dictate what type of onions you use.
So on their website, Dixondale's website, they have a very good map showing what zone you're in and what region you're in and what type of onion you need to grow. Also, they got a pretty good video on there of him explaining that again. So make sure you order the right ones. Now, there was a roasting onion we talked about a year or two ago. What do they call that roasting onion that they got? Do you remember the name of it?
I don't.
Anyhow, I was going to grow some of those.
Oh, the cipollini?
Cipollini, yep. Yeah. Cipollini. I was going to try to grow some, and I still might, but Mary told me, she's the head of their customer service, she said, Greg, these things might grow in your area, but it's more of an intermediate or a short day variety. But I may give those a try, just see how they work. It would be nice to have some. These things are really expensive if you can find them, and they're roosting onion, which I don't know that I've ever had, but I'd like to try some of them.
Yeah, so as far as the ones we plant are called short day onions, because our days are shorter,
mm-hmm.
When the bulbing process starts. That means the day length is 10 to 12 hours.
Right.
Intermediate day, you're looking at 12 to 14. Long day up north, they have them long 14, right. 16 hours sunlight.
Yep.
As far as varieties go within the short day types, the tried and true one we've been going with for the last few years is the Texas Legend.
Which is more of a big rounded onion.
Yes, which I like better. We've done the yellow grannies. I know you like the flat onions.
Well, the trend is moving more from that flat onion to the round onion. Even the guys up around Vidalia, the commercial growers, are moving more toward a round onion than a flat onion. So I'll probably go with the Texas Legends this year.
They just easier to cut up than the
and they flat. Store well.
Yeah, we are going to grow a few reds. We tried the Southern Bell Red and the Red Creole. I think Red Creole is what we got ordered this year. The red ones are quicker to bolt.
Mm-hmm.
They are. So they don't always store as well.
I don't like to eat those as spring onions with the green tops on them. I don't know why. I just don't care for that. I'd rather have my regular old yellow onion for that. I do like to grow the red ones. Gives you some variety. They don't store as well, but I do like to grow some. I grew probably about a quarter of that variety versus my regular old standard Texas Legend.
Right. All right, let's talk about some planting tips here. And you kind of alluded to a little bit of this here. One of the mistakes I see that a lot of people make is they wait
too late
to plant the onions.
Yep.
You want to plant these onions. If we could have got plants, we might have already had them planted.
Yeah, but November ideally is the ideal time. Ideally is the ideal.
Yeah.
Is the great time for us to plant our onions. I mean, I've been doing it for years, and every time I've ever planted them in November, I had a really good crop. What happens is when you wait around to January and February and try to plant onions, that's when you run into some issues.
Well, you don't get enough top.
Right.
And then there ain't nothing to really make a good bulb. So
plant
them as early as you can. And onions can tolerate temperatures down to 20 degrees. If you get several days below 20, they're going to struggle.
Yeah. You got to get them established before you have that cold weather come in there. That's the key.
We had all that snow last year. Ours got burned a little bit, but they came back.
Yeah.
So you want to plant as early as you can because you want to get as much of that green growth you mm-hmm. got that's going to turn around and make that big bulb.
Right.
And we like to plant ours on about 4 inch apart.
Yeah, I plant mine pretty thick. If you was to look at it, you'd say, ooh, he's really messed up. But I do like to pull some of the spring onions when they start getting about as big as your thumb and the tops get nice and pretty. We start pulling them and eating them. If you don't care for those green onions and you just want to grow the big bubbling onions, probably about 6 inch spacing, 4 to 6 inch spacing is going to be ideal.
Yeah, and you can... So what we'll do, like he was talking about, is right when that bulbing stage is starting, we'll go in there and basically pull every other onion and then take your knife and cut them tops off clean. And you got some nice, pretty green onions to eat. Those are really good. I plant mine on double rows. You plant yours on single rows. I like using the drip because you just can't give them enough water once they start bulbing and stuff like that. And I like to be able to inject the fertilizer to them.
Yeah, well, I'll do things a little bit different than that, but I generally plant a whole bed of stuff that I don't use drip on, so if I have to water overhead, it's not that big of a deal for me.
Gotcha. Well, let's talk about growing a little bit, what you want to do once you planted them. So like I mentioned before, there's two stages. There's the foliage stage and the bulbing stage. So think about it this way. The more leaves you can get on that onion, the bigger the bulb it's going to be able to produce. And that's why if you plant them late, You're not going to get as many leaves. You, in turn, not going to get as many bulbs.
Well, if there was such thing as a perfect onion, how many leaves would it have?
Bruce claims that the perfect onion has 13 leaves. So if you look at onion growing like this, there's an what I would like to call the foliage stage. That would be what we call the investment stage.
That's interesting.
Okay, so you're not really seeing nothing happen as far as what you're wanting there. You're just investing in all this foliage. And then you got the payoff phase, which is the bulbing phase, which is you're going to reap your investments. Those leaves are going to turn around and make that nice onion.
So correct me if I'm wrong here, but for every leaf that you got on onion, then you got a layer of onion on
right,
the row.
Right, yeah.
So the more leaves you got, the more layers you got on the onion. So that's interesting. If you ever slice one open and count those layers inside that onion, that's how many leaves you had on that onion plant.
That's right. And you can't always count the leaves on the onion plants. Some of them die off over time. But that's how many rings you get on the onion.
Yep.
So we want to get them as much foliage as we can, which means plenty of water, plenty of fertilizer. Now let's talk fertilizer a little bit.
So in that leaf stage, you really want to invest more in, as we're talking about investments and payoffs, you probably want to invest more in putting nitrogen on there in the leaf stage because you're encouraging that top growth. After you get that leaf stage growed off like you think it should look and you start bulbing, then you're probably more reliant on phosphorus and potassium.
Yeah, and Bruce and them recommend when you first plant them, put them in the ground, give them a complete blend of fertilizer because the phosphorus and the potassium
it's gonna be there.
Are gonna help root development, and then just pumping the nitrogen. Then I've heard people adding sulfur.
Yeah,
sulfur. I've never added sulfur.
No, but sulfur is one of the elements that onions like. So sulfur it could be important. You could if you didn't have a source, you could use a sulfur a urea, some sulfur nitrogen, sulfur coated nitrogen, or they make just regular old sulfur you could put out there on. So it would be nice probably if you don't have a lot of sulfur in your soils, you might could amend a little bit in there.
Yeah, so what I'll do is I'll give them that 20-20-20 to start, and then I'll lay off that, and a lot of times I'll just top dress with sprinkle some Chilean nitrate in there on that double row just to get them tops nice and tall. They claim you want to stop fertilizing when they start bulbing.
And the reason being is because you want to slow down that growth at the top and let it focus more energy on the bottom. So you want to take your nitrogen away. You've already got your potassium and your phosphorus there because it's not going to go anywhere until that plant needs it. But that nitrogen is mobile. It moves a lot quicker. So cut that nitrogen off when you start the bulbing process there and it starts using that phosphorus and potassium to build up that bulb.
That's right. And we hear a lot of people talk about, oh, I like this variety of onion. It's sweeter than this variety and all that. But according to Bruce, which he knows more about onions than I do, the sweetness of the onion is completely dependent on the amount of water it receives.
I would agree with that if you was comparing varieties. If you was comparing the same variety, I could see that. However, there are varieties out there that are more potent or more stronger flavor than other varieties. But I think when you start talking about the same variety and you start comparing the same variety, I think that's what makes the difference in the sweetness of that is the water in the bulb.
I got you. Give it plenty of water when it's bulbing, it'll be nice and sweet, and then we always wait till the tops fall over before we harvest the...
You'll know when it's time.
You'll know when it's time, because it happens fast.
Yep.
All right, so if you haven't ordered your onions, give Bruce and them a call and get them ordered. I think they're going to start shipping towards the end of November. Go on and get your plot ready. I got mine ready. I got a few pepper plants I got to pull up. But I got it ready.
I'm sitting on ready. I am sitting ready. I just need it to dry up a little bit.
Yeah.
Another thing, too, on onion plants, the sooner you can get them in the dirt, the better off you are. They do not do well sitting out and waiting a few days. So the fresher the onion plant you can get and the quicker you can get it in the ground when you get it, the better off you're going to have with that plant, you know, recouping and start growing.
And we're going to try some, supposed to be sending us some leeks and some shallots we're going to try. And then elephant garlic too, which is they all have pretty much same growth characteristics. So we'll kind of plant them all in the same area and treat them all the same.
Right, exactly.
All right. So I hope you enjoyed that. And if you have any more onion questions, put those in the comments. We'll get to them. Let's get to our questions this week. And if we answer your question on the show this week, we'll send you one of these nice neoprene koozies right here. Keep your hands warm. Keep
your drink cold.
That's right. The first question we've got is from Daniel Crow. And he says he's having trouble getting phosphorus in his soil. Want to know some organic ways to boost it so he can, since roots depend on it, he wants to get his phosphorus up.
Yeah, this is a carry on from the message we had last week. We was talking about phosphorus, different things, and actually we could probably do a show just on phosphorus and one on potassium and one on nitrogen. But anyway, phosphorus in the soil, he wants to know how he can add more. The first thing you need to know is how much you got in the soil. If you're low on phosphorus in the soil, then there's several different ways. An organic way that Daniel wanted to do it, you could do it with bone meal, you could do it with hard rock phosphate, soft rock phosphate, any kind of bone meal. Now the problem with these organic sources is they're going to take a good bit of time for that phosphorus to come available to that plant. Hard rock phosphate, which is actually a mineral that they mine out of the soil, can take 3 to 5 years. Soft rock phosphate is a lot quicker, but still it's not immediate. And then you got your bone meals that break down quicker than that. So there's your options there if you want to go that route. Personally, myself, I don't have a problem using a what they call a triple superphosphate, and that's a 0460. And that's what they use in commercial fertilizers. Now, the way they get triple superphosphate is they take hard rock phosphate and they etch it with an acid, or they take an acid and put it in and it pulls that phosphorus out in a slurry and it becomes immediately available. So if you're not really hung up on going organic, that triple phosphate is not a bad way to go. It's 46% and it's pretty quick. It's going to tie up in your soil and it's not going to leave out until you use it. Now, if you do have an overload, you have too much phosphorus in your soil, the best thing to do is to use a crop like corn, because corn takes a lot of phosphorus to pull it off. On the other side, the flip side of that, if you're growing a crop like corn, you want to make sure you got plenty of phosphorus for that phosphorus-loving crop. And we're going to throw up a picture here of what corn looks like when it's got a phosphorus deficiency. It's got a purple leaf on it. It's got a purple tint to it. So when those phosphorus loving plants, you got to make sure you got plenty available there for it. If you use those organic types like the hard rock and the soft rock and all that, make sure you understand it's going to take a while. You need to anticipate that and put it out way ahead of time. If not, go with the triple superphosphate.
All right. And then our second question
is from old Grumpy Neanderthal. You recognize his real name?
It could be.
Grumpy Neanderthal. He says, if you kill weeds with glyphosate, which is Roundup, will it also kill the seeds on that weed?
So this is a little bit of a trick question. So talking about glyphosate or commonly known as Roundup, it is not intended to kill weed seeds that are mature.
Correct.
So if you say you have you're spraying it on an area and you have weed seeds that have already fallen off that plant on the ground,
or that's mature on still on that plant,
or that's mature on the plant, it's not going to kill those. It will kill the plant, but those seeds are still viable. Now if you had seeds on that plant that were still attached and not matured left, then it would, it by killing that plant, it's going to stop that seed maturity there. So no, it's not.
And virtually it would kill the weed seed, because I mean if the weed seed's not mature, then it would theoretically kill that seed because it wouldn't let it mature out.
Right, but some seeds are not dispersed until the wind blows them off, so they could be mature and still in the plant. So yeah, it's not going to kill the weed seeds. The best thing to do as far as weed seeds on your dirt is not to incorporate them in and keep them on the top, let them germinate, and then eliminate them. Because you always use Roundup or something like that if you choose to kill the plants. You can't kill the seeds until you let them germinate.
Or kill the plant before it seeds.
That's probably the better way to go about it. All right, so if we answered your question, send us an email to custserve@hosstools.com. We'll get your prize out to you. And we hope you enjoyed this week's show, and we will see you guys next week.
Take care.